Welcome to the America's Jobs Team podcast. Every week, we dive deep with economic development professionals on leadership and other issues challenging our industry. Our goal is to equip listeners with the knowledge to grow their impact and influence. You are America's Jobs Team, and when you get stronger, communities thrive.
Hey everyone, welcome back to another episode of the America's Jobs Team. I'm Carla Solins, and I am really jazzed up about this interview because we have spent so much time as an organization kind of studying who we felt like were best in class, not only the leaders of those organizations, but also the organizations themselves. And Ready Cincinnati has always been one of those organizations at the very top of the list, which is hard for us in Michigan to admit sometimes that there's several from Ohio on the list, but we still love you and we have a lot to learn from you. So I'm so glad, Kim, that you're with us on the podcast today and just excited to hear what's going on with you and with Ready Cincinnati and in the great city of Cincinnati. So I thought maybe we'd just dive in. You've been on the podcast before, but I think that some people might need to just to jog their memory on how you got into economic development and certainly how you landed at Ready Cincinnati. So will you just share your quick story with us?
Absolutely. Carla, thanks for having me back on. I love this podcast, and I especially love to hear when Michigan people praise us in Ohio, but we feel the same way. So it's definitely a mutual respect and admiration going both ways. So yeah, certainly. You know, I think one of the things that makes my story a bit unique is I am one of those lifelong economic developers, which seems to be fairly unusual in this field. I came out of grad school having done an internship for an urban enterprise association. I got my master's degree at IU in Bloomington. And I fell in love with economic development the second that I spent a semester doing work. And it was really the intersection of the public and the private together that just sparked my passion. And I've never looked back. And I was able, fortunately, to find jobs in, you know, several progressively sized cities up to a county and then some consulting and finally at the regional level. But it continues to fuel that passion I've always had for sort of the social policy impact, but moving at the speed of business.
Yeah, I love that. And I think that that's certainly for me personally, where I found that like love intersection was like, there's so much you can do on the public side. But when you couple that with like the speed of business and just interfacing with the private sector, it's just amazing how really transformative things can happen when everybody's kind of like their eye on the same prize. So speaking of transformative, it's been kind of a wild year. So how are things down in Cincinnati? What is your team like? What's kind of keeping you up at night? What's exciting you? Give us the rundown on what your team's working on.
Yeah, you know, I was looking back at my calendar. I think it's been almost exactly a year since the last time, you know, I was on this podcast, and gosh, what a different conversation. It was sort of like, how are we going to survive, right? In the midst of very early stages of COVID and a global pandemic. You know, I'll tell you what keeps us up at night is still making sure that we're recovering from jobs that were shed during the pandemic, but I'd say the word for us right now is frenetic. Our pace is off the charts. We had our second best ever Q1 for 2021. Our pipeline is as strong as I've ever seen it. We're starting to see some of those really large office projects come back, which for us, you know, we say every year we've got a really large office project and we had zero interest in 2020. And seeing the diversity of industry. So, you know, I would say it's hopeful. It's exciting. It's feeling like the parts of economic development that get you jazzed because you've got to be on your game and you've got lots of information rolling in. But I would say what keeps you up is the uncertainty of how quickly they'll act on those requests and that information, right? Like we all want to add jobs tomorrow. I want to make up for the goal that I didn't hit last year, let alone the goal that I have this year. So for me, it's making sure that, you know, not that I can make sure, but trying to control the pace of that and knowing that decisions are going to be coming.
Yeah, that's awesome. Okay, so let's talk a little bit about all of the money that's coming in for, you know, this recovery. And what's your kind of thought, or what are you thinking of in terms of as you, I'm sure people in your community are asking you to weigh in on opinions on what you feel like would be transformative to do with all of this influx of spending that communities will have and, you know, your state will have. What are your thoughts and how are you kind of trying to at least share the economic development message behind what could be possible with some of those dollars?
It's pretty overwhelming when you think about the sheer amount of dollars that are coming in, right? We've been working with Jobs Ohio, and you know, I always mention them because we're so fortunate to have them as a partner in Ohio. The analysis was showing that were getting about three times more money than than was distributed, you know, during the stimulus dollars that came out under the Obama administration. So that kind of blows your mind when you think of the sheer amount of dollars, right? And so we're partnering with Jobs Ohio and leveraging McKinsey to help us put together a playbook so that when people ask that exact question, what can we do that's transformative? What can we do that isn't just, you know, a one-time infusion, but really sets ourselves up to be very competitive going forward? My mind always goes to site development. I'm a broken record in Cincinnati. We need more ready-to-go sites. So certainly thinking about sites, thinking about infrastructure, and thinking about talent, and then trying to be that resource to our communities, you know, some of which are seeing an infusion of dollars that they haven't probably ever seen. We know that our larger cities are, and counties are pretty well set in their process, but really becoming that resource to the community to say, if you want to invest in economic development, here's a couple ways you could do it.
Yeah, that's awesome. And it's really cool that you're kind of working, you know, to put together a playbook. I think, you know, there's a lot of communities that can learn from that model and just trying to get really organized, because I think we've been in such a reactive state in some places where, you know, money came and we had to react so quickly. And I know, you know, all across the country, there was different, you know, grant funding for different small businesses, different programming, but it always felt like there's such a short timeline.
Yes.
And so this is an incredible, as you mentioned, an incredible amount of money that you hate to feel like people just were like reacting quickly to. Like you, we want to believe that there was really good thought about the ROI of this sheer amount of dollars that is going to be hitting the system.
Absolutely. Okay. Long-term impact.
Yeah. So let's switch gears a little bit, because you kind of talked about the frenetic pace that you all are on. And I think it's really good that the project pipeline is still full. I think this time last year, we were all kind of sitting back really worried about that piece of the equation. And to know that people are moving again and the pipeline's moving again and people are traveling again is just feels like one huge weight off our shoulders. But it also, I'm just really tuned into the fact that economic developers worked so hard last year, and then this year's coming and it feels like almost like a wave is crashing of now all this opportunity. And I feel like people are struggling to kind of keep their energy and their spirits high. How are you, as the point leader of a very significant organization there in Cincinnati, how are you taking care of yourself and really trying to keep the spirits high of your team that's kind of went through, we all, regardless of what field you're in, you kind of went through a traumatic experience at some point in 2020, trying to grapple with all of the pandemic stuff and social unrest. How are you just kind of setting the tone for your team?
That's a great question. And, you know, I think it continues to be exacerbated by, you know, not all being back in the office at the same time. So, you know, parts of my team are vaccinated, parts are not, but we're still on staggered schedules. And to your point, some of us are traveling, some are not. And, you know, for us, culture has always been something that's so critically important. In fact, I think that's one of the things that we sort of borrowed from, you know, from our trips up into Michigan. And so trying to build that team and keep the morale high while people are just exhausted has been interesting. But I think for us, we did our annual meeting. It was the end of March and we had to do virtual, which we were all pretty bummed about. But when we started to put together, we did a lot of video that we had some of our impactful companies and projects to kind of shoot on their iPhone and send in. And when we all put it together, I had a watch party for my team who was comfortable. And of course it was socially distanced and masked, but we got to at least be in the same room and to, I think, see the impact that we had in 2020 in the midst of the worst possible circumstance was just heartwarming. And I think it made us even more committed to following through in 2021 and having a different narrative and a different story. So I think that was hugely impactful for us, is hearing those success stories, hearing the appreciation. In fact, some of the video brought tears to our eyes, those project managers who worked those projects, because the infusion, the assistance that we were able to leverage in 2020 was impactful in ways that it had never been before. Mm-hmm. So I think it validated our desire to do it. And I would say that layered on with the fact that we were in year one of a strategic plan last year, which was challenging in and of itself, that nothing like releasing a strategic plan and then having a pandemic hit, but it convinced us that it worked and it worked well. And so we already had the blueprint for 2021 and we were really nervous when we sat down at the end of 2020 and tried to kind of tabulate our results. Did we stick to the plan? And we found overwhelmingly that we did, even in the worst of times. And so we know in 2021, our path was set. Now we have tweaks and things to come, but it really engendered this huge confidence and this commitment that our community had already spoken, had already laid the path. And we knew that if we stuck to it, that we, as we started to see this opportunity, we were going to just be able to like vault ahead of where we were in 2020.
Yeah, that's awesome. And I think, you know, always having a good plan is it's you need a plan for times when like this, where you could really easily like lose your way. It's so nice to have a plan. I mean, you can tweak a plan, but if you have nothing to go off of, you can end up like miles away from where you want to be. And I love that you kind of talked about that, you know, shared celebration. I think we're just a nature of people in economic development that it's like, yep, project done, on to the next. You know, you're juggling so many at the same time that it's just, you're excited about it when it announces, but you forget almost like as quickly as it came, it's gone. It feels like it's gone and you're on to the next thing. And I like that year reflection of like, look at what we have accomplished this year, because, you know, this job is hard. It's, and especially in a kind of a politically divisive, you know, world that we're in right now, it can be harder than it needs to be because of some of those outside influences. And so spending that time celebrating is really cool. Okay, so let's talk about being a woman in economic development, if you will, because it tends to be, it's starting to become where you start to see a lot more women, especially women in leadership. But there were many, many years where there weren't a lot of women in leadership, and you've always been one in your predecessor prior to you that really stepped up, really had a lot of respect in the industry. And I'm curious for you, like, you know, what do you feel like we should do or can do to continue to like lift up women in this industry?
You know, I think to your point, it's becoming more and more common to see more women in the industry, both on the consultant side, on the economic development practitioner side, on the brokerage side. And so that in and of itself is incredibly rewarding. But, you know, I think we have a special, I would say almost obligation or responsibility to make ourselves available. You know, I say to the women in my office and those in the community, you know, reach out to me. I'm happy to talk to you. It was not an easy path, right? Mm-hmm. I was doing this, I guess that makes me old, but I was doing this 20 years ago when I was one of the only women in the room. And even today, as our profession becomes more, I think, equal in terms of representation of male and female, the boardroom still isn't. So you're still walking into negotiations with clients and C-suite where I might still be the only woman. But I think it takes thicker skin. I've said this many times. You've got to take things less personally. You've got to, you know, shrug off some of those comments. And I always say, be the most prepared person. The more prepared you are, the more that you're willing to chime in, the more that you're seen as a leader and a subject matter expert, the less you start to think about, but I'm the only one in this room. And it's sad, but it's true. It's still there. But I do think there's so many role models. And I know, you know, other people, other women like me are happy to reach out and have that conversation because we want more. That I think it's behooving upon us to make sure that we're helping to lift right as we climb.
Yeah. And that's one of the things that I think has been so cool about the leaders that we have right now in economic development that are female. I think that they've just been so incredible that as soon as somebody even gets close to emerging, like as soon as somebody's recognized as like being a high potential and they're female, it feels like people start reaching out and saying like, what can we do to help you? And that's just really cool. And I'm not sure that, you know, other industries have that peer network of like, we can compete all day on projects, but we still want to see like other women in this profession be successful. And I think that's also in the site consultant community. Like they've been just so gracious and so great at, you know, trying to help build this, you know, awesome bench of female and I think minority too, economic developers, which is really cool.
I do think that's one of the things about our industry that we overlook, right? People always think of the competitive nature of it, right? I compete with, you know, my counterpart in Columbus, I compete with Indianapolis, like pick your thing, but we're really a pretty tight knit group of individuals. So even though there's a competition factor, there's way more of a collaboration and camaraderie. Yeah, I'm going to win some, I'm going to lose some over our neighboring communities, but it does us no good to not come together to advance our profession and the people in it. And I don't think that that's well known or understood outside our industry. And I think that's a true gem of what it means to be an economic developer in this country.
Yeah. Have you seen that kind of shift since you've been in economic development? Like, was it always that way in your 20 years? Or have you seen it become more and more collaborative, like across state lines, county lines?
I think it's probably become more and more collaborative as economic development has become more and more common, right? Like I remember 10 years ago trying to explain to somebody at a cocktail party what you did for a living. And they're like, you know, I don't get it. And now you can say, well, you remember Amazon HQ too? Yeah, well, I lead the organization that responded to that. And I mean, that's an extreme example, but I think as it's become more mainstream and people start to understand it, it's made it easier for us to reach out and kind of talk to our other counterparts too, because it's just become more accepted that it's not this little siloed, I think, profession.
Mm-hmm. So if you had like one worry for just economic development in general, what do you feel like that worry would be like when you think like 10 years down the road?
You know, I mean, I just think it's maintaining relevance in an ever-changing global mm-hmm. economy, right? So yeah. It's like, okay, federal incentives, is that going to be a thing? Okay, well, if so, how does that impact our jobs at the regional and state level? Mm-hmm. You know, as we continue to be more and more global and we compete at a different level, I always come back to, I think economic development fundamentally shifted last year during the pandemic. We don't have to be on the road 300 days a year talking to people across the globe. We can do this from our desk, which is good and cost effective, but does it also change the value of what we do? And then the incentive conversation, right? The more that changes, perhaps we don't become the brokers of it. I think there'll always be economic development. I just think it's going to be in a remote work environment where we know it works in this global economy. It just has to fundamentally grow and shift because mm-hmm. it's not going to be the same profession that it was 15, 20 years ago.
Yeah. And as it kind of grows and shifts, what role has your team, like, are you still doing mostly just kind of like what we would think of like traditional economic development, or have you kind of shifted and really started to think about like, what is our role in the talent conversation and in the place, you know, making that, that's kind of, when you think about incentives and why people choose where they do, like everybody has always said, and I agree that incentives are, you know, not always the driver, often just kind of a final cherry on the top. And it's really, where's the talent? Where's the place? Sometimes where's the site, obviously. But what role is your team kind of playing in that, you know, as you predict the future of where things are shifting, how is your team kind of like starting to shift?
It's absolutely a much more holistic conversation around livability, right? And so to mm-hmm. me, livability is site, livability is talent, livability is arts, culture, sports, venue. And those used to all be components, but they were secondary, right? To sort of the hard charge on here's your industry statistics. And it's just become a much, I think, more holistic view of what it means to locate and be in a community. And mm-hmm. I think that it's sort of broadening out, right? So it used to be really granular, like you are a startup and you talk to this person, you're a growth stage, you talk to this person, you're a full on growth, you talk to me, you know, you kind of mature through the pipeline. And that's not the case now. So we're becoming, I think, much more well-versed on a variety of topics, and we have to look at the way that we have these conversations differently. So I think even my team has noticed it's not the same, you know, one-page sales sheet that we would talk about if we were traveling. It becomes much more of a conversation and a fit and a, how are my people going to fit in? And it's definitely morphed, but I think it's the same assets we always had. It's just the way that we talk about them and the way that company executives are evaluating where they want to have their location.
Right. I think you're so true, because when I remember, even when I first started, it seemed like, you know, you kind of laughed at people, were like, that, you know, our schools are great and our community is great. And now it's kind of flipped, where you might not be presenting it like our schools are great, our community is great, but it really does come down to that fit, you know, like it feeling like the right kind of like cultural fit does play a huge role in that. Almost was laughed at 10 years ago of like even having that conversation felt like really soft in the room. And now it's shifting where it is much more conversational, and that does play a big role. You know, you still have to be very sophisticated and be able to sell, you know, the business case of why. But that business case also really does include that. You said livability, but, you know, that holistic. I think that's awesome. Well, Kim, thank you. I know we took up more time than we had planned, but I had lots of questions for you. So thank you so much for being on the podcast. I always enjoy catching up with you and learning from you. And I think send our love to the team there at Ready Cincinnati. We hope you all are doing fabulous, and we hope to see you in person, hopefully sometime here soon.
Absolutely. And thank you for taking time. I right back at you. Love the team and enjoy this every time. So I learned something as well. I appreciate it.
Okay. Awesome. Well, thanks, Kim.
Thank you.
Thanks for sticking with us to the very end. And again, a huge thank you to our sponsors, Research on Investment and Gazelle AI. The America's Jobs Team podcast releases episodes every week that are specifically curated for economic developers like you looking to stay in the know about industry trends, leadership development, career management, growing high-performing organizations, and so much more. So don't forget to subscribe. You can subscribe on Apple Podcasts, iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher, Amazon Podcasts, or really any other preferred podcast outlet that you use. America's Jobs Team is audio engineered by Joshua Wieters and produced by Faye Davis.